Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to a Labor Day weekend edition of Philly Fanatics, Philly Sports Talk, and this is our Eagles preview edition. And boy, we got a little extra to talk about this more than we planned, because yesterday the news broke. Eagles traded Sam Bradford, almost an unheard of thing to trade your starting quarterback this close, trade your starting quarterback period, and certainly not this close to the start of the season. With me right now, Gordon Glantz. We'll go through all the Eagles stuff. We have to start with the Sam Bradford trade. Gordon, I guess the first question is your impressions of the trade.
Well, I'm still trying to pick up pieces of my jaw from the floor. It really, like you said, I mean, you just really don't trade your starting quarterback on the eve of the season. But, it came up, in speculation, and I was asked by people what I thought, and I said the only way I would even entertain it is if, like, you get a first-round pick and maybe even another pick, like a fourth. And sure enough, that's what they got. And, you know, they got themselves back in the first round. They also got a fourth in 2018. It just changes the whole dynamic. I mean, they had no first. I don't know how good Minnesota will probably be, better than the Eagles will be. So, you're probably looking at a pick somewhere between like 15 and 25, as opposed to a pick somewhere between 5 and 15. But it's still you're back in the first round, and that makes a big difference when you're trying to build a program. The draft is in Philadelphia next year, which I hope they're not thinking about that, the PR part of it. But, that is, I guess, something they thought of in the back of their minds. But I guess, like Howie Roseman said, it was kind of a win-win for both teams. Eagles freed up some cap money. It was hard for a lot of people to envision Bradford being here beyond next year anyway. I mean, I guess there was an outside chance if he played lights out, they would keep him around for another year. Played lights out and maybe they won a division, they would keep him for another year. But more than likely, he was just a one-year guy, a one-year fix, and who knows what they would have gotten for him next year. And so the opportunity was there, and I guess they seized the moment. But obviously, as I'm sure we'll get into later in the show, this kind of changes projections. It changes the whole outlook for the team for this season. I think it cost them 2-3 wins for sure.
Yeah, that leads me to my next question. We'll have Josh Landsberg with us. And Gordon, I know this was a big story last week, but it's amazing that the draft coming to Philadelphia is like way in the rearview mirror now, which only happened this past week. But I'm sure you're excited about that. I know that. Josh, so Gordon started talking about this right at the end of his comments. How does the Sam Bradford trade change the outlook, not just the expectations, but also, I guess, the way people are going to look at the Eagles season?
Well, it definitely changes it a lot. I mean, I think I have the Eagles. I know we're going to get into predictions a little bit today, and this kind of changes my whole philosophy on how I'm going to predict this season. It's much more up in the air. I had the Eagles with Sam Bradford possibly going somewhere in the 8-8, 9-7 range, possibly having a chance to win the week NFC East because obviously Tony Romo is hurt. And, you have the Giants who don't have a great team also, and the Redskins who – kind of lucked into winning the division last year and maybe don't have the best team either. So pretty weak NFC. So I had the Eagles, around that 8-8, 9-7 range, possibly winning the division. Sam Bradford played well, but now it totally changes things. You have a rookie quarterback. They haven't announced it for sure, but most likely he's going to start the whole season. You do have Chase Daniels in there as well, but I think this move shows that they want Carson Wentz to be out there right away. Maybe that's not such a bad thing. I mean, Jameis Winston did play all 16 games for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last year, and they didn't make the playoffs or anything. He played pretty well. So sometimes it's good for a rookie quarterback to get in there and play right from the beginning. There's different schools of thought. Do you start him every game right away, or do you wait a few years? You have successes with both. You have Peyton Manning, went 1-15 in his first year and ends up winning a couple Super Bowls, and then you have a guy like Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre who sit on the bench for 3 or 4 years and also win Super Bowls as well. So there's really no rhyme or reason to it. It can work both ways, I think. But I think that I agree with Gordon. I think this does cost them a couple wins. I think they're maybe a 6-10, 7-9 team right now. Although you never know what can happen. I mean, Wentz could end up being, you know, the quarterback of the future and a great, but even, you know, even great quarterbacks struggle in their first year. And I think that it's going to cost them a few wins. One thing that I think is pretty cool, I agree with Gordon 100%. I think this is, they were ripe to make this move. They got a, you know, they got a Minnesota Vikings team that just lost their quarterback and were desperate for a quarterback. And they got, I think, a lot back for Bradford, probably more than they would have gotten back. Or definitely, I would say more than they would have gotten back if they would have traded him after the season. Even if he did play lights out, I think they just wouldn't have gotten as much form. And the draft happens to be in Philadelphia this next year. I don't know if we talked about that at all yet. The draft happens to be next year in Philadelphia, and the Eagles didn't have a first round pick, and that's kind of embarrassing, not having a first round pick when the draft is right in your hometown. But now they get that first round draft pick back. They get a fourth round pick, and they talked about it on the site in your top 10. Things, Eric, that it could be as high as a second or third round pick, depending on how Minnesota does if they have a deep south run. So that's really exciting. I think they got a lot back for Bradford, and I'm excited about this move. I did like Bradford a lot. I thought that, you know, he's had a lot of injuries throughout his career, and he could still be a pretty good quarterback. But he's not a franchise top 10 quarterback. He's kind of a middle of the road. You could probably list 14 or 15 quarterbacks in the NFL that are better than him. He's kind of right in the middle of the pack, you know, in the top 15 maybe, or just on the outside looking in. So you have a guy in Carson Wentz who could potentially be hopefully a top 10 quarterback at the very least, and maybe even a top 5 quarterback in the league in the future. So I think that this was the right move, and I think the Eagles are looking more toward the future than the present.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the season is now about the future more than the present. I think you're right. Just, Josh, just one little statistic on the site, since you talked about some of the quarterbacks' history and as your first-year starters. And it's in my column on the Bradford trade, and honestly, it's a statistic that was first, I saw cited by Mike Silski from the Inquirer way back when Sam Bradford was unhappy in the spring. And that is that of the, in the 10 prior drafts to this last year, of the 25 quarterbacks drafted in the first round, 15 of them started week one of their rookie season. So definitely the trend lately has been to get these guys in as soon as possible. I think it's something like 21, I'm quoting my own column, I can't remember, but I think 21 of 25 were the starter by the midpoint of the season. So I never thought that this was going to work. And Gordon, that leads me to my next question. Howie Roseman yesterday sort of made it sound like, you know, they weren't going to trade for Sam Bradford, and geez, all of a sudden this opportunity came up and the Vikings offered a lot and they did it. And I half believe him, but my question, and I raise this in my column, is just based on the way the offseason went with the huge contract they signed Chase Daniel compared to what he should be, you know, and then the trade up to get Wentz, that I think option A all along was to trade Bradford, but they weren't going to do it unless they got enough for him. That actually him starting the season and playing the whole year with the Eagles was the fallback plan, not the first plan, and they just didn't get enough for him. What do you think of that?
Yeah, as conspiracy theories go, I think there could be some validity to it. It's really hard to say what they're thinking. They could be thinking a combination of things. I mean, that may have been a thought that they had. I'm sure it was a thought that they had going back a few months. But as the season approached and as he looked pretty good in the preseason and kind of, you know, put all ill will on his behalf aside, and seemed to grasp the system and everything, that probably became less of a thought, at least for right now. So I'll take him at his word that he really wasn't shopping him at this point, at this late juncture, because it is very odd to do that. I mean, it's almost unprecedented. So, yeah, I think if what happened with the very unfortunate thing that happened with Teddy Bridgewater, you know, would have happened, you know, back a few months, I'm sure the Eagles would have been a little more active in talking to Minnesota as opposed to Minnesota being approaching the Eagles. But just looking at the timing of this, I really don't – I would have to take him at his word that I don't think he'd be looking to shop Bradford at this point. It's just kind of bizarre how things flip around. I mean, we were looking at a Carson Wentz at best maybe starting at some point next season, you know, where we thought maybe Bradford would hold down the fort this year, then maybe they would go sort of in that Chase Daniel part of the season till Wentz was ready next year at best. Now, you know, look at him, a quarterback coming out of a lower-level competition who played you know, won a little bit in one preseason game and then got hurt, now coming out and starting week one. And there will be mistakes. I mean, that just goes with the territory. And, you know, week one and week two, they're winnable games. So, you know, they really are rolling the dice here and looking long term. You know, you just hope they don't lose the rest of the locker room in doing it. So it'll be an interesting situation to monitor all the way around. Obviously, they're going to have to do a lot of things that they were going to have to do anyway. Keep the games close, low scoring, send them into the fourth quarter with good defense, with being able to run the ball. That just becomes even more magnified. I mean, they were things we were counting on even with Bradford, but without Bradford and with a young quarterback in there, it almost becomes essential that the defense just really keeps them in tight, low-scoring games where maybe you can count, get a bounce or a break in the fourth quarter. You know, special teams, you know, you can count on hopefully maybe you get a blocked punt or you get a punt or kick return and, you know, some, a big play from a special teams and then maybe you steal some games. But, you know, it's just kind of the way the reversal of fortunes kind of just flipped around here. And Chase Daniel still doesn't get a chance to start, as far as we know. I mean, maybe if Wentz isn't ready, he starts week one, but he's still a pretty high-paid backup. So, you know, and it's kind of interesting because Jared Goff, who went first, from what I understand, I think he's second or third on the Rams' depth chart. So, you know, they're kind of taking a slow approach with him. He apparently had a terrible preseason, and, you know, and the Rams aren't a team that's, you know, planning on going anywhere anytime soon. So, you know, there's all kinds of schools of thought on it, but it really is just how things just changed in the blink of an eye there from a guy who's going to be your third-string quarterback and maybe not even see the field this year, and most people were okay with that, to a guy who's going to start week one with barely taking any snaps in the preseason.
Yeah, inactive on game days is what Doug Peterson told us, and you know, he might be, you're right, he might, I mean, there's talk he'll be the starter week one, although, you know, they said if he's healthy. Which I'll tell you what, that's a bad thing, because if he's not healthy, I can tell you Chase Daniel's going to get booed for no fault of his own.
And you know what is odd, Eric, they don't have a third quarterback, and the way Roseman is talking, he's talking about how some teams don't carry three quarterbacks, and there's nothing really wrong with that, and they're happy with the room the way it is right now, and, you know, the quarterback room, and, you know, if you're talking about a quarterback who's not a backup, who's not 100% healthy, you know, behind your starter, and they don't have a third quarterback, that's just, you know, something's going to have to change there, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so. Josh, let's start to, as we examine the roster, so rather than give you a position, let me just ask you, what position group is the strength of this team?
What position group is the strength of this team? That's a good question. I would say probably defensive line. I think they have a really strong defensive line. I think Dr. Cox is certainly I would say, the best player on this team. He leads that group of defensive linemen. You have guys that have had some injuries in the past, but if they can stay healthy, like Kendricks and some of the other guys in there. So I would say defensive line is the strength of this team for sure. I think that they can get some sacks and some pressure on the quarterback. I think a lot of times, you know, there's different schools of thought. You can build outside in or inside out. You can have a really strong group of secondary and have an average defensive line, and or the opposite, a really strong defensive line, average secondary. And I think that's what the Eagles have. I think the second option, the latter of the two, is the better option. I think you win in the trenches. You build with your offensive line and your defensive line. And I think that if you have a really strong defensive line, the Eagles showed that in the past. They had really good secondaries as well, but they showed in the past with some of their great defenses, then we had a really strong defensive line and got pressure on the quarterback, it makes your secondary look all that much better. So I think that having a really strong defensive line and maybe an average secondary is better than the opposite, having an average defensive line and a really strong secondary. So I would say defensive line is a strong point.
Yeah, and that's certainly the way it worked in the preseason. You know, you're facing a different caliber quarterback and teams don't game plan for you, but the Eagles, I might have had 7 or 8 interceptions, and a lot of it was off of pressure from their defensive line, really got off field and after the quarterback. Gordon, give us a strength aside from the defensive line. We'll give you Josh gave us defensive line. Give us another strength of this team.
Another strength, I kind of like the group of running backs that they have. You know, I think Ryan Matthews, when healthy, is as good as maybe not some of the superstar backs in the league, but I think he's a very good back when he's healthy. I know that's a big if, but you know, I really like the way he runs. I mean, he can run tough up the middle. He can bounce it to the outside, and you know, you look at some of those Kansas City teams, the way they used to run Jamaal Charles and get the ball in his hands. You know, I know it's asking a lot for a guy who's had a lot of injuries in his career. But you know, I think if and when healthy, he could handle the workload. And I think Sproles is going to be a huge part of the offense. I think he was underused by Chip Kelly to the point that it was almost criminal. And I think a lot of it had to do with, I know pretty much from what I understand that, you know, LeSean McCoy just wouldn't come off the field when they wanted to rotate backs. And, you know, last year the offense couldn't sustain a lot of things to really rotate guys when they got rid of McCoy. So, I think Darren Sproles is going to be a big part of the offense this year. And I think Barner's a good player. And don't be surprised if by mid-season you start seeing Smallwood worked in there as well. I think he didn't get a lot of snaps in the preseason, but what we saw him have a nice kick return. He had one night, he only had two carries, but one of the carries was an impressive carry for like 8 yards. And if you go on YouTube and Google and stick his name in there, you can see a ton of highlights. He's definitely a talented guy. So, you know, I think the running backs are a pretty good group. You know, and I think the safeties also, I don't know quite about the corners. That's kind of a question mark. But you know, Rodney McLeod and Malcolm Jenkins is a really nice pair of safeties that can cover up a multitude of sins in the secondary.
All right, so there we go. We got defensive line, running backs, and safeties as the strength of this team, and a pretty good choice. And we're going to do the negatives now, Josh, coming to you. And who said we're not positive here in Philadelphia? We did the positives first. But we do have to recognize that there are some weaknesses on this team. Josh, pick a weakness on the Eagles.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that the wide receiver core is a weakness of this team. They just cut Paul Turner. I was a little bit surprised by that cutout. I thought he had a pretty good preseason, but they really don't have a strong wide receiver group. It's headed by Jordan Matthews. I thought getting Reuben Randall, a veteran wide receiver, would actually help them. I like that move, but so far he's been a huge disappointment in the preseason. He hasn't looked good at all, and who knows, he may even get
Josh, they cut Reuben Randall.
Sorry. Yeah, I was going to say he might get cut. Sorry, I wasn't up on that. Yeah, I was going to say he might get cut, and turns out I was right. He did get cut. So they cut Reuben Randall. So he was a guy they brought in as a veteran presence that they thought could help them. He didn't help them either. He looks poor in the preseason. So overall, just just the wide receiver group is not a strong one. You hope that Nelson Aguilar can develop a little bit more in his second year. Usually they say in the West Coast system or whatever system the Eagles are playing, any type of system, it takes about 3 years for a wide receiver to develop. And we kind of got spoiled a little bit the last couple years with the rookie wide receiver class. The rookie wide receiver class was really strong, headed by Odell Beckham Jr., and they played really well their first year. That doesn't happen too often with rookie wide receivers. So who knows? Nelson Aguilar could turn around in his second year, if not this year, hopefully by his third year. But overall, it's just not a very strong wide receiver group.
Gordon, before I ask you for a different weakness, I want to build on what Josh said. And I look at this wide receiver group. Jordan Matthews, he's pretty good. He didn't play the whole preseason because of his knee injury. Nelson Aguilar did nothing in preseason after having 23 catches as a rookie. Josh Huff is like... Josh Huff's like a good golf shot. Like you play a terrible round of golf, but you hit a shot to within 4 feet, from the fairway, and then you know you hit another good shot on another hole. You sank like a 20-foot putt, and you come out of there remembering the 20-foot putt and the shot to within 4 feet of the hole, and say, well, you know, if I could really bottle that, I can do that all the time. And, you know, with Josh Huff, every time he does something good, you go, boy, that'd be great if he could do it all the time, and he never does. And then they add Beckham Green has talent, Green Beckham has talent, but you know we don't know exactly what he is. They added picked up off the waiver wire today from the 49ers. His name's escaping me.
Bryce
Treggs. Thank you, Bryce
right.
Treggs. Okay, so my question is, this is before I ask you, but this is a big build up to. Paul Turner was the best receiver on this team during the preseason. I know he's not big, and I know he's not super fast, although he looked pretty good on the punt return this past week. What's the point of the preseason if Paul Turner doesn't make the team?
That's an excellent question, and it's also, you know, in year one of a program, and I take us back to, you know, Dick Vermeil. You know, when you're trying to build a program, you're really, it's as much as like you're just putting down a foundation, like building a house. And you just want to do it the right way and send the right message. And maybe Paul Turner wouldn't be here in the long haul, but I think for him to make the team, I think would send the right message to a lot of people that this is a kid unheralded, came out of kind of nowhere. He wasn't even one of the undrafted guys that they signed after the draft that anybody even talked about. He was just a name, and he did everything they asked him to do. And for him to still not make the team. After initially making the team, you know, I think he'll end up on the practice squad, and I wouldn't be shocked if he is on the practice squad if he ends up activated at some point in the season. But I think it just sends a horrible message. I mean, I go back to Vermeil. You know, Vince Papale, there might have been guys who are a little bit better than Vince Papale, but, you know, the way he came in and worked in that training camp, and, he wanted to send a message that I'll take a guy off the street like that who never even played college football if he comes in and does all the right things, even if he's not, you know, a guy who's going to be here for 5 years or in a five-year program or that kind of thing. So, that is an excellent question. And it's not just with him, it's with a couple other guys as well. You know, what is the preseason for if a guy like that can't make the team?
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't know the pedigree, I mean, you would have cut Nelson Aguilar and kept Paul Turner, no question. But, you know,
right.
Before I ask you your weakness, we do have a caller on the line. And caller, if you'd like to ask a question, please say your name and then ask us a question.
How's it going, guys? It's Tom.
Hi, Tom.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah, I'm literally just tuning in, but I'm sure you guys have talked the Sam Bradford trade a lot, right? I would imagine.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys are of basketball fans, but, I mean, this guy is basically like the Kwame Brown of football. He somehow continuously gets traded for way over his value over and over and over again. And just I am absolutely astounded that they were able to turn what – I don't want to say a disaster because that's a very strong term to put on it, but what looked like a very, very poor personnel move – not only giving up a second-round pick to acquire him, but then signing him to a relatively large two-year contract to not only get out of it for free, to get a first and a fourth-round pick. I mean, it might be the best move in the NFL since the Bengals got, I believe, two first-round picks for Carson Palmer when they sent him to the Raiders. I mean, I'm blown away by that. I'm sure you guys have talked about it a lot, but I just am completely blown away by it. And what it does for the team is it takes a season that was going to be just very confusing in terms of what is this football team, like what are they trying to accomplish, and makes it very clear that it's a rebuilding team in quotes. It's a team that has a lot of the pieces that hopefully need to be in place already there, and now we could start moving forward into that. But to be able to do that and get a first and a fourth round pick for Bradford, I mean, I just, is that beyond what you guys in your wildest dreams thought we could get for him?
Well, Tom, we did talk about how it changes the outlook of the season, and, you know, instead of thinking about winning the, you know, a mediocre NFC East, that, you know, now it's really all about the development and the futures now. But I do want to go to your questions. By the way, I'm a basketball fan. I think you're either overrating Kwame Brown or underrating Sam Bradford, but that could be a discussion for another day. But let's, Gordon, why don't you take this one? Were you surprised, or how surprised were you at how much Howie Roseman was able to get for Sam Bradford? Because clearly, a couple months ago, when he was looking for a first-round pick, rumors are he couldn't get anything higher than one second round for him, or second at a late pick. So how surprised were you he was able to parlay this into a first, and by the way, it's a fourth now, but it's conditional. If the Vikings, if they win the Super Bowl, I think it is, it's a second-round pick, and if they make the NFC Championship game, it's a first and a third. So, Gordon, answer Tom's question. How great a move was this, or how surprised were you they were able to get this kind of return?
Of course, if they're that successful, the first-rounder would be later, so there is a flip side to that. No, because Minnesota's a team that, you know, they made the playoffs last year, and you know, they have a guy like Adrian Peterson who's, you know, still, while he's a little older, he's still effective, and, you know, they have a very good defense, and I think they kind of felt like, you know, now what, you know, and I think they just had the opportunity presented itself with you know, a horrific injury very late in the preseason to a team that had kind of aspirations of going to the postseason, and they kind of caught the right team at the right time and were able to work out, you know, what Roseman called a win-win. You know, and Minnesota's taken a gamble because of Bradford's injury history. I don't know how much of a gamble the Eagles are taking really at all, other than, you know, it really kind of cuts down their chances of really kind of making any kind of dent this year. But, you know, really, if you really break it down, so let's say you go 8-8 and you win the NFC East on a tiebreaker, what does that really mean? I mean, it doesn't mean you're going to the Super Bowl, because they wouldn't have a team of that caliber. So, you know, Roseman said it's a win-win for both teams. I think it's more of a win for the Eagles, but I understand why Minnesota had to make the trade. And of the quarterbacks who would have been available, he was unfortunately, you know, the best option. You know, unfortunately for them, he was the best option. Fortunately for the Eagles, he was.
I was just throwing there, Roseman took a heck of a gamble here because, you know, let's say Sam Bradford had gotten hurt, all of a sudden you're going to get nothing for him. So he gambled and it paid off. Tom, you're absolutely right. He got, I think, more back than anybody expected. Tom, let me ask you a question regarding the season and the outlook. How patient do you think – so let's say the Eagles really don't do well, you know, with Carson Wentz and some combination with Daniel – you know, and they don't win more than five games. Do you think fans, because of the trade now, will be patient throughout the year with that?
I think that if Chase Daniel plays 12 of the 16 games, that patience is going to wane. I think if Wentz plays and shows some flashes, that the patience will be there. I mean, you know, to me, what's amazing about this and where you have to hand it to the Eagles no matter what, right, even if Wentz doesn't pan out, what they've done here is they took some poor Chip Kelly moves of personnel-wise, and they were really able, if you just look at it as a package now, they were able to take DeMarco Murray and, you know, Kiko Alonso, pretty poor contracts, turn them into a pick that eventually got them within firing distance of moving up to the second pick. And while it looked like they gave up a lot to get to the second pick, now what they've done is they've taken Bradford, which was the other Kelly move that was certainly questionable. And they've essentially, you know, if you look at it as a whole, I mean, I don't know the exact details, but it kind of looks like they really only gave up a couple later round picks to move up to get what could be a franchise quarterback. So even if Wentz doesn't pan out, at this point with what they've been able to recoup, it was a risk that is a no-brainer to take. So I would hope Eagles fans are a little more patient. What I hope that we get to see this year, I think the offense is going to struggle. I think the running backs are, you know, it looks bad. Wide a receiver doesn't look great, but at least they're young, so we have that. Ertz, I hope, finally puts together a season, but I think that the defense should take a step forward. I mean, it really just depends, right? If Wentz comes in there and looks unbelievably terrible, like Blaine Gabbert bad, then I think that the fans are going to start pressing. But if he comes in and looks pretty decent, I would hope that fans can be patient, because the number one thing I would say why it's important for a fan base to be patient is that the more pressure, irrational pressure that is put onto a front office, that's how you end up getting bad free agent signings, right? When the GM starts to feel the pressure, they're going to lose their job. That's when you start to see them spend big money on players that don't make sense. I would hope that fans can see that the more patient they can be with the team in a fair way, the smarter that the GM is going to be. And in the long run, the goal is they're not winning a Super Bowl this year. They're not winning a Super Bowl next year. We should be looking 2 years down the line, hoping we can be competitive next year, and then really looking to have an excellent team 3 years from now.
All right. Tom, thank you very much for calling your comments. Excellent stuff. Appreciate you calling in. We got just a little bit of time left before we lose the live show. I will be going into archive. I encourage you to check out PhillyFanatics.com. my column up on Sam Bradford trade, story on Sam Bradford trade. This week we'll have our Eagles preview from Gordon. We'll have an NFL preview coming up there and some more Eagles stuff along with all the other stuff we have on PhillyTheNags.com. So thank you for listening live, and we're going to do our our NFL predictions on the other side, although I'm going to give Gordon one more shot to – well, no, we'll just do the predictions. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week about the Eagles-Browns game. Gentlemen, before we get into our predictions for the Eagles record and also around the NFL, we'll take a look at some of the divisions, maybe the Super Bowl, depending on how much time we have. I should point out, Nicole kind of brought it up, or he almost brought it up, but we saw what the Eagles gave up. A winner from this trade has to be the Cleveland Browns, who have the Eagles' first-round pick next year. And as you talked about, we all sort of, I think, have adjusted the wins down two or three games for the Eagles. That Browns pick is going to look better and better that they got for in the trade where the Eagles move up to number two to get wins. So let's keep that in mind. So, Josh, let's go right with you first. We'll start right with the Eagles' record. What's their record, and give me one reason why you're going there.
Well, like I said, before the Sam Bradford trade, I had them at about 8-8, 9-7, something in that range, possibly contending for the division. But I think I agree with Gordon. I think this knocks them back a couple games. I think that Carson Wentz, you know, we'll see if he's healthy enough to start week one, but he's probably going to start the majority of the games, and a rookie quarterback is going to take his lumps throughout the season. So I'll say I'm debating between 5-11 or 6-10. I'll be a little bit more optimistic and say 6-10. I think they do have a caller, Tom, pointed out that their defense is going to be improved. I think they have a pretty strong defense, and that will help carry them through a couple victories. That'll help them earn a couple victories. Their offense is going to struggle, but I disagree with Tom, and I agree with Gordon. I think their running back group is pretty strong, actually. I like Barner a lot. I think he's had a really strong preseason. I like Ryan Matthews, if he can stay healthy. So I think that Wentz, a rookie quarterback, will depend, and Doug Peterson, a rookie head coach, will depend on the running back game a lot. So I see that the Eagles will go 6-10, squeaking by a couple victories, some close games, losing some close games, and certainly missing the playoffs, obviously, at 6-10, and getting another pretty high draft.
Well, but that draft pick will go to Cleveland. Don't forget, they're going to get Minnesota's pick.
Oh, that's right.
So,
sorry.
Yeah, her record won't hit. Gordon, you, your prediction, and since Tom asked some really good questions, you didn't get a chance to tell us your weakness other than receiver. So if you want to throw that in with your prediction, you can.
Yeah, I can save my weakness for my final thoughts.
Okay.
In terms of a prediction, I was encouraged enough in the preseason to kind of go with 8-8. Based on what I saw from the defense, you know, and I really think that front four is legit, and I think the linebackers, they have some nice linebackers. They have a lot of depth at linebacker, but they have some nice linebackers, assuming, again, Hicks and Kendrick stay healthy. So, you know, I think the defense is legit, and I was going to go with 8-8 based on that, but obviously, this, like I said, this changes everything. You know, and I'm looking more at 6-10. And, you know, I always harken back to that Dick Vermeil era. Right before they got good, they went, I think it was 1977, which was a year before they made the playoffs for the first time. They were 5-9, but actually scored more points than they gave up. So they were in a ton of close games that went either way. And, you know, they maybe won one or two games, maybe by double digits, and lost a lot of really close games. And, you know, it may be a season like that, and it may be when you look at some of those games and break them down, just what you're going to get, growing pains from a young quarterback, you know, that bad interception in the red zone, that, you know, a poor decision, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, again, you have to just ride it out with Wentz, but you may point to, you know, not just with him, maybe a drop pass, maybe some other things, you know, that just kind of, you know, really magnified themselves in some close games. But that'll be encouraging enough, I think, for us to feel like, you know, if they can correct some of those things, there is a bright future. So I'm looking at a 6-10, but not a dismal 6-10. It's one of those 6-10s where I think they're going to be pretty competitive in most games, whether they play good teams or bad teams, but probably not have enough to get over the finish line in a lot of those games.
So they win some big games big, but lose some real close games. But of course, each game counts individually. Kind of like the Electoral College, if we use that analogy, but I don't want to go politics here. That's what I'll do is I'll just give it to, I should throw mine in there. I'm the most pessimistic of everybody here. I have them at 5-11. I just think they have too many guys who get hurt at positions where I don't think they have sufficient depth. And Ryan Matthews, I think, you know, we haven't even talked about Lane Johnson, but if he's suspended, they're one Jason Peters injury away from really being in trouble at tackle. And linebacker, Michael Kendricks, and what's the odds he's not going to get hurt? You know, so I have them at 5-11, but I won't be all that upset about that. If I see Carson Wentz developing and they make progress, I'll be just fine with 5-11. Let's do division by division. I'll throw the division out there and just, you know, you have to give me a reason. Tell me who the division winner is. And we'll start with the NFC. NFC East, Josh.
It's a tough one to call. You know what? I'm going to go with the Giants. I think they come back. They got a new coach. They get the salsa man back, their wide receiver. So I think that the Giants win the division.
Okay, yeah, we'll do it quickly. Gordon, NFC East?
NFC East, I'm going with the Redskins, and I think because Dallas and the Eagles now are going to be easier teams to beat, I wouldn't be surprised if the Redskins go 10-6.
And just to show you how wide open the division is, I'm going to pick the Cowboys because based on finishing last year, they get the Bucs and the 49ers, while the Redskins get the Cardinals and Panthers in this division. NFC North, so we got three different teams winning the East. Josh, NFC North.
Green Bay Packers.
Gordon.
Yeah, Green Bay. I would have thought Minnesota before this quarterback situation, although I think Bradford, if he stays healthy, keeps him competitive, but I think Green Bay is the class of that division.
Unanimous. I have the Packers, although I do have the Vikings getting a wild card. Josh, NFC South. And there should only be one choice here.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty obvious choice. There is the Super Bowl hangover factor of losing in the Super Bowl and not making it back to the playoffs a lot of times next year, but I don't think that's going to happen to Carolina. I think Carolina wins the division.
Gordon?
Yeah, I mean, Carolina, and I don't see Carolina making it back to the Super Bowl, but in that division, I do like them. Although, watch New Orleans. They're going to put up a ton of points this year. I know how much of a defense, but, you know, they can outscore some teams playing in that dome. So, but I still don't think they win a division.
Eric, I just wanted to also mention about the NFC South. There was like an 8 or 9 year stretch where a different team won the division every year. So just keep that in mind also as a possibility.
I will keep in mind, but I'm going to make it 3-for-3 here with the Panthers, all three of us. The very competitive, at least at the top of it, NFC West, Josh.
Yeah, tough call here between the Seahawks and the Cardinals, but I'm going to go with the Cardinals. They were my Super Bowl pick last year as the playoffs started. I thought they were going to make the Super Bowl, so I like the Cardinals to win this division.
Gordon?
I'm going with the Seahawks. Again, very tough. You know, it could be one of those things where both teams make the playoffs. One is a wild card, one is a division winner, and then they end up facing each other in the NFC Championship game. They could be the two best teams in the conference. But, you know, Seattle had one of the toughest records in the league last year, and they always get off to a slow start. But, you know, I think their offense is going to be, you know, running back by committee. And, you know, I think they're going to be a pretty good team this year. And I'm actually looking at Seattle to make the Super Bowl.
I have the Seahawks winning the division as well. I'll get your Super Bowl pick in a minute. AFC East, Josh?
NFC East? AFC East?
Yes.
You mean? AFC East. I'm going to go with Andy Reid and the Kansas City Chiefs.
No, that's the West. I'm sorry. Okay, we can start with the West. AFC West, you have the Chiefs.
Sorry.
Gordon, AFC West?
Yeah, because Denver's got that quarterback situation. It's a little shaky. And I think Oakland is really one of those sleeper teams. That said, I think Kansas City just has the most complete team right now in that division, although I really would look for Oakland to challenge for a wild card.
I'm sticking with the Broncos, although I think they might finish with the same record but somehow win a tiebreaker with Kansas City. All right, Josh, AFC East.
AFC East, I still think New England is the class of this division, even with Tom Brady missing four games. I think that Bill Belichick will find a way to win at least one or two of those four games and keep them not going 0-4 to start out the season. So I still think Tom Brady for 12 games is as good as anyone else in that division.
Gordon?
Yeah, I think they find a way to win at least two games while Brady's out, and I think that would be enough. And what is a competitive division, but not really anyone else that you really see stepping up and challenging them. I think the Jets could be tough. They have a pretty good defense. If they had scored more on defense last year, they would have had one of the best defenses in the league. Those are kind of things that ebb and flow. But, New England's a class of the division.
Yeah, I agree. And by the way, the Jets have just a brutal start to their schedule. I think five of their first six teams are playoff teams and four on the road. So we'll get that. You know, I'm afraid we're not going to have enough time for everything. So let's go to the Super Bowl. Josh, your Super Bowl picks. Who beats whom?
I hate to say it because I do hate the Patriots, but I just think that Tom Brady and the Patriots are going to play with a chip on their shoulder all season long. Once he comes back, they're going to be motivated. I have an offensive Super Bowl. I have the New England Patriots beating the Arizona Cardinals.
Gordon?
I have the Seattle Seahawks beating the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And I have the Carolina Panthers beating the Pittsburgh Steelers. So there's our thing. All right, with final thoughts, and we're going to keep them down to a minute apiece, or we won't have time for everybody. So Josh, start us off.
All right, I'm going to go to minor league baseball and the Reading Phillies, the best overall record in all of baseball. They're just tearing it up. The Reading Phillies have 88 wins on the season. They're 88-51. Best record in all of baseball, minor league or major league level. And they have a bunch of reasons for that, some good pitching, some great young hitting prospects. They got a couple guys, I think, with 38 homers apiece between a couple levels. And they just got some really strong players on that team. And it's really exciting for the future of the Philadelphia Phillies. That's at the Double-A level. A lot of times guys get promoted right from Double-A straight to the majors and skip over Triple-A. We saw that with Kyle Kendrick and a bunch of other guys. So I think that it's really exciting that the Reading Phillies are playing so well and that they have a lot of good prospects on that team that can help the Phillies next year and beyond. So the Reading Phillies and minor league baseball and moving up to play for the Philadelphia Phillies in the next year or two, hopefully.
Thank goodness, because the Phillies have lost six in a row and got swept by the Braves today. Gordon, your final thought.
Yeah, well, you asked me about weaknesses and on the Eagles, and I would say certainly a big question mark for me is the offensive line. And I think the NFL bears a lot of the blame for that by never really giving the Eagles a ruling on Lane Johnson, and they were operating as if they weren't going to have Lane Johnson for most of the season, 10 games. And, they shuffled their line accordingly for preseason games and practiced accordingly. And then it looks like now the season's coming and they never suspended Lane Johnson and they have to kind of go back to plan A when they haven't really practiced with that unit. And being cohesive is so important on the offensive line. It's more important than individuals. You could say there's a pro baller here and a borderline pro baller there, but it's more have they played it as a unit and do they function as one and kind of almost become like a well-oiled machine, just because not knowing has really deprived them of doing that going into the season. And I think that may really cost them, especially when you're trying to keep a young quarterback, confident and give him time to do some things back there. So, I think the offensive line is a weakness, and I think part of it is out of their control with the league.
Yeah, and also to add to that, they would have had a roster exemption for Lane Johnson if he had been suspended already, and they didn't have that, so they kind of had to burn a spot that maybe they could have used a backup somewhere else in another position that they can't do.
Absolutely.
In my quick 30 seconds here, I'm going to throw a couple things in here. One, Paul Turner should be on this football team. That's one. Two, congratulations to Allen Iverson, who will go in the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame next Saturday night. And Colin Kaepernick, which we didn't even get to talk about, he has every right to do what he's doing, but can't tell the people who are criticizing him they don't have the right to criticize him. Free speech works both ways, and we got to remember that. That's it for this week's show. I want to thank Gordon, of course, for excellent stuff in his Eagles preview coming up and his 53-man roster projections this past week. Josh, great job as always. I want to thank Tom for calling in and asking a good question and also making a very insightful comment. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. NFL preview coming up, Eagles preview, five things could go right and could go wrong, and also a little tongue-in-cheek look at how the season might go. So thank you for listening. For Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, I'm Eric Fisher. Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you next week after the season opener.